Hey, everybody, welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. We are talking about the Biden administration's collapsing support amongst Hispanics and Black voters. A new poll out of Washington explains it in grave detail. If you're a Biden administration staffer, if you're Biden himself, he's going to be looking at these numbers in shock and despair. I can promise you that. We break it down number by number. Poll by excruciating poll from McLaughlin and Associates. It shines new light that I promise you haven't seen yet. Also, we have Michael Knowles from Daily Wire on the show to talk about Catholics. Why are they lagging behind on the pro-life issue? We also talk about Elon Musk bringing Trump back onto the platform and so much more. A really, really fascinating discussion with Michael, who also gives his best pro-life pitch for those of you in the audience who want to hear it. So much to cover, so little time. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
This is Andrew Colvett filling in for Charlie, who is on vacation. Goodness gracious, did that man need a vacation worse than ever? He's still I'm seeing notes from him right now. He's sending us tweets. He's like, tweet this out. So, you know, Charlie's obviously still plugged in. He's still getting his news. Charlie, if you're listening, please hang out with your wife right now. No, I'm kidding. They have an amazing relationship. We're so happy for them. They have their 1 year anniversary. This will be an annual trip. So set your calendars this week in May. Charlie and Erica take time to themselves. But yeah, Charlie is still plugged in, but you know, he does need to relax and rest. The man works harder than anybody you will ever probably meet. It's pretty insane the pace he keeps up, and he keeps all of us on our toes, makes us all better. So that is always a good thing. Folks, in the interim, we've been doing some research here about the Black and Hispanic voting base. There's an article here from Paul Bedard, Washington Secrets, columnist for the Washington Examiner. It's headlined, Biden on the Verge of Losing Hispanic Black Base. So there's some new polling that's out of McLaughlin and Associates, which is a GOP polling firm, but they are very good at what they do. So, you know, the pieces of fairly good job here, and Paul Bedard is a great columnist with the Examiner. But starting under former President Trump, we started seeing this erosion of the blue-collar Hispanic and Black voters. Now, much ink has been spilled, much cable time has been devoted to the erosion of the white working class base. This is the if you want to say it, it's the J.D. Vance voter in Ohio, in West Virginia, Indiana, in the Midwest, right? These are the former union diehards that would vote Democrat, the blue dot Democrats, but they would stick with the Democrat Party. We saw that erosion with Trump. Now, much has been made of that move. But what's happening right now is, I would call it a tectonic political realignment. And we're seeing it because blue collar, working class Hispanic and Black voters are starting to gush, says Bedard, giving Republicans not only a good chance, but a probable, likely slam dunk chance in both houses of Congress to quickly lock down their own ruling majority. So this is a quote from the pollsters, Jim and John McLaughlin. Most distressing for Democrats is that Joe Biden's ratings are eroding in his political base, creating a path for Republicans to maximize their base, win the center. Okay, that's key. Maximize their base, win the center, and attract Democrat voters. So if you're Biden, this is what you're staring down the barrel of right now. Biden only gets 82% of his 2020 vote. 82% of his 2020 vote. And that's only 84% among Democrats. So he's only doing slightly better with partisan Democrats than he is with his overall base, which is a distressing, distressing signal. So if we're going to break this down one level more, okay, the base is upset with their president. 25% of Biden 2020 voters disapprove of his job. And get this, Biden's disapproval is 27% of self-proclaimed liberals. This is the disapproval rating. 19% among Democrats, which is a slightly more partisan, hardened partisan group. 25% among African Americans. So that means basically he's got 75% of the African American vote, which is a huge slip. His disapproval rating is 40% among urban voters. And this is where it gets really, really juicy. 57% among women. I mean, that's earth-shattering. If you're a Democrat political operative, you're looking at that number, 57% among women disapproval rating, and you are having a panic attack. You are ringing your, like, that 57. Democrats tend to win the female vote. I have to say, it's partly because women tend to be more relationally based, more emotional in their decision making. I'm not trying to be negative or I'm not being critical of women out there. But this is the way God just made us, and we celebrate the sexes and the strengths and the differences. Democrats tend to appeal to emotions, purely emotions, and they tend to win that. So when you see a number that says 57% of women do not support or disapprove of Joe Biden's job ratings, that is a fire alarm, folks. But it gets even worse. 61% among suburban voters disapprove. 61% of suburban voters disapprove. And guess what? 61% of Hispanic voters disapprove. Let me tell you that again. 61% suburban voters disapprove, and 61% of Hispanic voters disapprove. So if you take that Joe Biden has 82% of his 2020 vote still support him, 82%, that is down to 66,420,000 votes out of his supposed 81 million ballots cast for him. And we all know that there was shenanigans here. The 2000 Mules documentary has proven that. So this is another very, very troubling question. So you got to, pollsters, what pollsters do, and we've had Rich Barris on the show multiple times, friend of the show, he's great at this, but what pollsters do is they break down the same question, they ask it in a number of different directions to make sure that they're getting solid, solid statistics. Now, Jim McLaughlin noted in this piece with Bedard that when voters were asked about the direction of the country, for example, 37% of Blacks and 62% of Hispanics said the United States was heading in the wrong direction. Now, what's interesting about this is this all comes on the backdrop of the Roe leak from Dobbs, where Alito's majority opinion, 5-4, looks like Roe is on the ropes. It's going to be overturned. But the question is, will this animate the Democrat base? This is the assumption. This is what we're assuming. The assumption is about the reason behind the leak in the first place. We're assuming that they leaked it to animate the base and to help them in a midterms, which is looking increasingly like it's going to be a bloodbath for the Democrats. Now, Fox had an interesting piece on this morning where they were trying to assess, and they had voters in North Carolina cut 69. So this is about Democrat turnout. And we're asking the question, is the Roe leak really going to animate the Democrat base? Let's play this cut from Fox, cut 69.
Of the five contests so far, overall turnout is up 9% when compared to 2018. And 2018 was a big turnout year for Democrats. Democratic turnout so far is down 12% Republican turnout apparently is up 24% in these five states. There's a fellow in Texas, John Kuvelin, I think he's got a name right, who tracks a lot of this stuff. He's looking at the early voting in North Carolina, and apparently over an eight-day period since the Roe v. Wade leak came out, he sees no change in Democratic enthusiasm to try and vote in North Carolina, even after the leak from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well,
all right, so that's he's saying, Bill Hemmer's saying that this pollster is seeing zero change in the enthusiasm for Democrats in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision leak from Justice Alito. Zero, zero, zero. That is a massive fire alarm. So not only do you have record inflation, everybody's worried about the price of the pump, you've got zero uptick from the leaked opinion.
Have you looked at how much of Russia is inside your 401k or IRA? Did you know my friends at Pax Financial Group have zero investments in Russia through their biblical investment strategy? Those companies were screened out long ago because they didn't pass the treat people right test. One of the most important tenets of the Christian faith is to love your neighbor, and this includes to love your employees. Based on Pax's biblical responsible investment strategy, a company, domestic or international, is excluded from an investment from your portfolio if it violates our innate God-given fundamental rights. So Pax Financial is wonderful. They share our values. In fact, I know people that have switched to Pax Financial from our partnership, and they speak so favorably about it. Stop using the woke money managers. Pax Financial is rooted in biblical wisdom. So if you have $150,000 or more and would like to know more about biblical responsible investing at Pax Financial Group, text Charlie to number 74868. That's Charlie at number 74868. That's Charlie to number 74868. So you just take out your phone, text the number 74868, and type in Charlie to get to know about Pax Biblical Responsible Investing. Biblical Responsible Investing Strategy. Take out your phone, text Charlie to 74868. They're about to manage some money for me. I really think highly of Pax Financial. Text Charlie to number 74868.
I was saying something that I take as sort of an obvious presumption, that it was probably a liberal leaker that leaked the draft opinion from Dobbs, the majority opinion from written by Justice Samuel Alito. There's been many people on the conservative side that agree with this. We got Senator Ted Cruz, who said that it's probably, if he had a guess, he has zero evidence, that he would think that this was probably from one of the three liberal justices, one of their 12 law clerks. I believe he said that he thought it was Kagan, calling her the most hardened left-wing partisan on the bench. Obviously, that's before Ketanji Brown Jackson takes over. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't educate you all a little bit more on some of the other opinions. Now, an NPR reporter says the leading theory, quote unquote, on SCOTUS leak is a conservative clerk. I'm reading from The Hill. A clerk for a conservative justice is the leading theory amid intense speculation about who released a draft opinion authored by Justice Samuel Alito, showing the court is set to overturn Roe v. Wade, according to legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg of NPR. So again, they think it's a conservative. They're beginning to point the finger back. Now, you might be asking, why would on earth would they think it would be a conservative? The prevailing wisdom on the right, of course, is that it would have been a liberal clerk that leaked the draft opinion in order to animate the base. That's not happening, at least first indications. Now, time's not up. The decision to overturn Roe has not happened. But we haven't seen this types of reaction from the American electorate that one might have expected. Now, you might say, well, hey, look at they're firebombing pro-life facilities in Wisconsin. They're breaking into churches in LA and New York, anywhere in between. I mean, there's a massive uprising, right? This political crisis. Well, I want to present to you the idea that that's probably AstroTurf. This is dark money groups, and we've done, I think, a pretty great job on this show of exposing that. There's dark money groups that are pouring money into civil rights groups in an effort to make it appear like there's a massive reaction to Roe getting overturned. But we just heard that there's not an enthusiasm bump at all, at least preliminary indications. So why do you think a conservative would leak this? Well, Totenberg said on ABC's This Week that the prevailing theory is that a conservative clerk released the decision in an attempt to lock in the five justices who voted to support overturning Roe, as Chief Justice John Roberts reportedly attempts to pull his colleagues toward a more moderate position. That has never, ever occurred before, Totenberg said of the leak. That could only, in all likelihood, have come from a justice. That, I think, is less likely, or perhaps one of the clerks. The only one that makes sense is it came from somebody who was afraid that this majority might not hold. It's an interesting theory. And I, instead of decrying it as pure nonsense, I want to give it a little air here. We heard from Justice Clarence Thomas right after this. There was a piece in Breitbart where he said that the court would not be bullied. The court would not be bullied, and they would not be swayed by activists storming the homes of conservative justices. So maybe the theory is not a terrible one. I still think that it is not nearly as compelling as a liberal clerk leaking this in order to galvanize the left wing of this country, trying to intimidate and bully justices, conservative justices like Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Amy Coney Barrett. That to me is still the compelling presentation here. However, to this NPR reporter's point, maybe it has hardened their position. So two things can be true at once. I still think it's a liberal leaker that misunderstood the mood of the country, but it might have also hardened the justices that had their name on this. Maybe something could have happened had the leak not happened. Maybe some vote trading would have happened. Maybe John Roberts would have been successful in moderating the position of the court. Nevertheless, here we are. I think these justices are gonna hold their positions. I think Roe will be overturned. And I think it was a liberal who leaked it.
Hello, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. Super important announcement. Look, when you swipe your credit card, you're funding liberal causes. Dozens and dozens of times a month. Every time you swipe that card, you might as well do BLM LGBT, Clinton Foundation. But now there's a choice. I got to know these guys. I vetted them, checked out the technology. I'm a partner with them. I'm all in. It's called COIN, COIGN. It's a new credit card built for conservatives. I'm moving all my credit card activity under COIN. And the COIN credit card is an unlimited cashback Visa credit card that is just like every other credit card you've ever owned, with one huge exception. Every time you use the COIN card, they contribute to conservative charities that support your values. I'm using it, and you should too. Remember, we have to create a parallel economy, and this is a great new option. Act now. Go to COIGN.com right now to sign up to get a conservative COIN credit card. That's COIGN.com. Join COIN, and let's start spending right.
Happy to be joined by my friend Michael Knowles, host of the Daily Wire's The Michael Knowles Show. Everybody check that out. Michael, welcome back to the Charlie Kirk Show.
It is great to be with you, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on the show all the time. I mean, it's great to have an apostate, you know, Catholic be able to explain these horrendous poll numbers. I was like, Michael, you got some splaining to do, my friend. Got some splaining. Catholics, according to Pew, you got 48% of Catholics that believe that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. So that's 48 to 47%. What the heck is going on right now?
Well, it's very sad, but the reason that you see that is because Joe Biden calls himself a Catholic. Nancy Pelosi calls herself a Catholic. The Cuomo family has called themselves Catholics. They don't assent to the teachings of the Catholic Church, but they were raised Catholic. Maybe they went to church on Sunday sometimes. And so they take it on as a kind of cultural identity in a similar way that Jews will do this.
Right.
Jews, being an ethnicity and a religion, will say, I'm Jewish, even if they don't believe anything about the Jewish religion and they don't follow any of the practices. I have a sort of personal connection to this in that I was raised a cradle Catholic. We have infant baptism. That's one of the reasons that people will keep this identity, even if they don't actually practice the religion. And I went away. I fell away from the faith for about 10 years. And I came back to it. And I came back to it in a very gradual way. And I came back to it through certain Protestant thinkers and through certain not Christian thinkers. And then I was convinced God exists. And then I was convinced Jesus is who he says he is. And then I was convinced that the Catholic Church really is the Catholic Church. And so I came back to it with all the zeal of a revert, all the zeal of a convert. And it drives me crazy because take, for example, Joe Biden, who says he's Catholic. He goes, I believe he receives communion at Mass. He is in a state of grave and unrepentant sin. He is supporting abortion in a very public way. He is committing the sin of scandal. He is committing all sorts of sins. And the scandal here is that he's leading the flock astray. And it's a real risk. You know, when Christ says, it's not going to go very well for those of you who lead the little ones astray. It's
just thinking about that verse.
Millstones and all of that. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about here. We're actually not even really talking about abortion, though that verse is often applied to abortion. We're really talking about the sin of scandal. And so the statistic you read is extraordinarily disheartening, that roughly half of self-identified Catholics reject the teaching of the Catholic Church. It puts them at risk because if they are receiving the Eucharist while they are in a state of grave mortal sin, they're eating their own damnation, to quote St. Paul. But also it leads the church astray. And so this is where the bishops really need to step in. It is incumbent upon the bishops, and there are a lot of good bishops out there, believe it or not, who have spoken out on this, but there are a lot of cowardly bishops too. When I did my blank book about 5 years ago, I did a blank book, Reasons to Vote for Democrats, I mentioned this to a priest friend of mine. He said, Michael, I think I'm going to write my own version called the wisdom of the U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops, and so often they won't speak out, they won't stand up, and they really have to. It's important for the flock at large, but it's important even for the souls of these apostates, of the souls of these people who are rejecting the teaching of the church and really imperiling their future.
No, we haven't heard it from that angle, but I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there is the issue of the unborn children. But thankfully, my theology is such that if those unborn children are murdered, that they will be with the Lord in heaven. You know, I believe that with all my heart. That being said, you're talking about the people that are adults, right? I mean, doesn't the Catholic Church have something like the age of 12 it's like before and after the age of 12 is when?
Well, there's an age of reason. I thought it was age 7, but your mileage may vary.
Our adolescence is getting prolonged and all.
It's going to be 25 soon enough.
Exactly, right.
But, you know, yes, you're not really morally culpable when you're too young to make moral decisions is the idea. I hope that you're right, Andrew. I hope that the unborn babies who are killed through abortion, I can hope and I can pray and I can trust in God's extraordinary mercy. But for a Christian here, the fear is that these babies have not been baptized. The fear is that they still have the stain of original sin. And so from a theological perspective, there is a real worry here. I mean, obviously it's awful what's happening to the babies. Just the physical aspect of it is just so awful and unthinkable. But there's a spiritual fear here as well. It's why the issue, I suppose, is so urgent.
Yeah, I mean, I think I lean on the side of I'm going to trust in God's incredible grace and mercy here for a child that was robbed of its chance of life because of the scourge of abortion on this land. But to your earlier point, Michael, this becomes a cultural endemic issue because we have people that are claiming to be people of faith, and yet they are not living up to one of the most fundamental bedrock issues I think a person of faith can come to grips with. I mean, you and I are both parents. It's when you go through that issue, when you go through that process of having a child, if you pair that with your faith, I just simply cannot grasp somebody being on the other end of this issue. And I don't mean to be hardened to people that are in the midst of wrestling through this. We had somebody on the show earlier, the Matter of Life director, Tracy Robinson, who she herself went to church, and she was sort of in the mushy middle. She didn't want to tell other people what to believe. She was converted to basically now an activist on the pro-life movement because she heard a compelling argument for pro-life. Michael, to put you on the spot, I hate to do it, but I kind of love to do it. Give me, if people listening out there and they want to know why Michael Knowles is pro-life, what is your most compelling argument for pro-life?
Well, I had a similar story, actually. I supported abortion for probably 10 years, probably maybe not quite that long, my teenage years. And then I had a conversation with a bioethicist, and she convinced me that I was wrong. I made all the stupid popular pro-abortion arguments that you will always hear. They were in that book, Freakonomics. People would say, well,
Oh, yes.
Not only is the baby not a baby, but if we have more abortion, you know, we'll have less welfare. We'll have less crime, you know, all these sorts of ghastly arguments. And so I was reciting them to this pro-life bioethicist. And she said, okay, Michael, which of those arguments cannot also be an argument for killing young black men in the inner cities? Which one? And I didn't have an answer here. Of course, the problem with abortion is much more fundamental than any statistical issue or predictions of crimes that people haven't committed. The issue of abortion is the baby a baby or is the baby not a baby? We know that the baby is a baby. We know that he's human. We know that he's alive. We know that he is unique. We know that he has unique DNA. And therefore, he's a human being entitled to all the same rights that every other human being has. And furthermore, in a world in which a mother can kill her own child and where that is encouraged and celebrated, there is nothing that people will not do. When some people were shocked that a Supreme Court clerk leaked, allegedly, you know, a clerk leaked this opinion for the Dobbs case, they said, I can't believe this would ever happen. The upsetting of norms and standards. I said, of course they did this. These are the sort of people who kill babies. Of course they're going to upend a norm and a standard. If you can kill a little baby, there's no end to what you cannot do. But then furthermore, I think one other argument that's worth considering is to take the look from the perspective of rights, there's no question. Abortion is completely unacceptable. The baby does have the right to life. That's obvious. But what about the perspective of duty? What about the perspective of obligation? Let's say I open my door one day and I see a disgusting, dirty, filthy bum just on my doorstep, just a rotten, nasty stranger. I don't know him from Adam, and he's dying of thirst. He's not just thirsty. He's dying of thirst. I've got water in my home. Do I have an obligation to give him water? I could just say, hey, it's my water. It's my property to give or withhold as I so choose. But I think I do have an obligation. I think that man, even though I don't know him, even though he's a dirty, rotten, derelict bum, he's probably high on drugs, I think he actually has a claim on my water. If he's dying of exposure and there's no other house around for 20 miles, I think that I have an obligation to take him in a little. You know, we can have some protections. Maybe I'll have my gun out or something like that in case he tries to rob me.
But well, they want to get rid of that right too. But yeah,
that's okay. Right. That's right. They're going to get rid of that one also. But I think I have an obligation. I think he has a legitimate claim on me because we're not just free-floating atoms born primarily to entitlement and rights. We live in a political community. We're born to mothers in a family, in a community, in a nation, and we do have obligations to one another. And so if you would extend that grace of handing a glass of water to the bum, how much more so must you give of yourself, of your resources, of your time and your energy and your property to your own child?
I think that's a really compelling case, Michael. Well said, and bravo. I mean, I think, you know, one of the other arguments that really frustrates me is when you see these radical activists on the streets, like ripping fake paper mache babies out of their, you know, their lower extremities, and slamming the baby's head on the ground and saying, it's my right to do this, and I'm going to kill the baby. You have this MSNBC, I guess, analyst or whatever, come on and say, you know, I'm going to sleep with the leaker. And then if it's a conservative, I'm going to abort the baby and let them know. If, you know, the disgusting, grotesque expression of this issue is it's almost difficult to comprehend when you're on this side of the issue. You know, and finally, this is one of the things I'll say is that they make this claim that we are going to force them to have children. We're forcing these poor women to have children. We're going to mandate, turn them into birthing factories. And I, you know, it's like the most obvious explanation is before them and they can't see it. Nobody is forcing you to have sex. Nobody is forcing you to engage in intercourse when you know damn well that could result in a human life.
But furthermore, they say that the people who oppose abortion are pro-forced birth. Do they know how an abortion works? Do they know what an abortion is? Do they think the baby just disappears in the womb? Abortion entails giving birth. just like you give birth to a living baby, if an abortionist goes in and kills the baby in the womb, you still have to give birth to that baby. So what the abortion side is always trying to do is pretend that the baby is not really a baby and just say, oh, it never happened. The baby was never conceived. Okay, you'll go in, you'll have this procedure. Everything will go back to normal. You can't deny the fact of the baby. The baby is already there. The question is not what should have happened 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago. The question is, what are we going to do now? And the only question before you is, are you going to kill that baby or are you going to permit it its right to life and either raise it or give it up for adoption? Those are your only two choices. And I think we know which one is good. And I think we know which one is evil.
I think we do. And I think what the Democrats are going to see that's going to really surprise them is that the minority voters that they've taken for granted for so long, immigrants that are now legal citizens can vote, they're going to react and reject this white liberal Washington elite bubble presumption that they're just going to champion abortion everywhere and it's going to go fine for them.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. You've known it in your gut and something just wasn't right about the 2020 election. Well, guess what? You were right. And here's the proof you've been waiting for. In Dinesh D'Souza's explosive new documentary, 2000 Mules, executive produced by Salem Media Group, you'll see jaw-dropping evidence of exactly how the Democrats pulled off the biggest heist in American history. Drawn on meticulous research from the election integrity group True the Vote, 2000 Mules uses both cell phone geo-tracking data and video evidence to uncover a massive network of illegal ballot trafficking in all five key swing states. Enough election fraud to change the outcome of the 2020 election. Thousands across the country attended the national theatrical release. Now you can watch from the comfort of your home, watch on any device with a web browser. Gather friends, families, and skeptics alike, but don't miss it. Go to salemnow.com to watch it today. See the movie that Donald Trump calls a real blockbuster? Go to salemnow.com to watch today. That's salemnow.com.
Michael, you are what I would call one of the advocates for free speech. When Elon took back over, you might have had the spiciest Twitter handle in the entire platform for about a week. I mean, you often are running for top billing there, but that, you were really going after it. I mean, you were taking on the trans stuff. You were taking, and we have all the stuff that Charlie got banned for. Indefinitely suspended, we'll say. So I want to play this cut. I've been waiting to get to it all day. Twitter, Elon Musk talking about Trump. Cut 70. Let's play it.
I do think that it was not correct to ban Donald Trump. I think that was a mistake. It was a fun. I think it was a morally bad decision, to be clear, and foolish in the extreme.
So that was not a statement that left too much room for ambiguity. You could see him almost going back and back and back saying, I just want this to be extremely clear. Like, I think this was a crappy decision. What's your take on Elon saying Trump would be welcome back to the platform?
Well, it's a smart business decision. And as Elon points out, it's the right thing to do. I think that's why he keeps reiterating it. Is he saying, look, I think it was a bad decision for the business. I think it was a bad decision politically and morally, I think it's bad too. And this was what was so offensive about kicking Trump off of Twitter, is that you've got a handful of oligarchs in Silicon Valley controlling 90% plus of the flow of information around our country. Our country is supposed to be, at least, a republic. In a republic, the way you govern yourself is by talking. You persuade one another, you have debates. And so if you've got three oligarchs who are all extremely left-wing controlling all the speech, that's not just like they control some aspect of society. They control the entire political order. And then to go to the extreme of actually censoring the duly elected sitting president of the United States. We're talking about January 7th. The guy was still in office for two more weeks, and they took it upon themselves to kick him out of the public square. That's a revolution. I mean, that is a political revolution taking place in virtual reality. And so Elon recognized, not only is that bad business, that's a threat to the political order, and it's morally extraordinarily wrong. And I think he's trying to entice the big guy to come back on the platform and get the ratings up again.
Yeah, there's some speculation about whether or not this could even happen, right? Because Trump has Truth Social now, which it was basically rolled into a SPAC, which took it public. These are sort of, they call them blank checks entities. There is speculation that there are clauses in that contract that prohibit him from coming back on to Twitter. Now, we don't know that. It's just all speculation. It's experts weighing in. Regardless, the question then becomes, what happens in 2024 when he presumably runs for office again? Will he come back to Twitter? What's the over-under on that?
I think that if he wants to run for president, he probably has to. It was his most effective messaging platform. Everyone is dying for him to come back. Frankly, it's probably a good thing that the president will not be on Twitter for 2022, because 2022 right now is all about Biden. It's not a presidential year. It's a bunch of down the ballot sort of candidates. And so if we can focus on what a complete disaster Biden is, I think it's going to be an absolute landslide for Republicans. If Trump comes back on Twitter, everything's going to be about Trump again. 2024, it's a completely different story. As of right now, President Trump says he's going to run for re-election. So if he's going to run for re-election, then the guy needs access to platforms. the guy can't be shut out of the public square. And there will be the side benefit that it will be extremely entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, there you bring up a very good point. Is Trump being off Twitter for now good for 2022? I mean, I think the calculus is different going into 2022 versus 24, simply because this is about other candidates, not Trump. I mean, right. I think that's a really, really smart point. Okay, sum it up for us. How bad is 2022 going to be for the Democrats?
They're not above water on any issue. They're underwater on every single issue: the economy, immigration, foreign policy, inflation, on and on and on. They're underwater on all of public health even now, which was the one issue they previously had. But if you look at Joe Biden's approval rating, he's only got net approval in four states. That means in 46 states, the guy is underwater. If we keep it focused on him and all their terrible policies, it's going to be a tidal wave.
Man, I think you're right. I hope you're right. If we can get this election integrity thing under wraps, I think you're really right. But, you know, we still have to play the game. We still have to play the game. That's why they make us go out and vote. Michael Knowles, The Daily Wire, The Michael Knowles Show. Thank you, my friend, for coming on. It's been an honor.
Great to be with you as always.
Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. If what we do here makes a difference in your life, I ask that you might consider becoming a supporter of the show. Go to charliekirk.com/support. If you want to send Charlie an email while he's away, he's reading them. Send an email to freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.